Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 23, Blaze of Glory. Teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and directed by Kim Friedman. Blaze of Glory aired on May 12, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, to prevent a Maquis missile attack from reaching Cardassia, Sisko must force Starfleet traitor Eddington to lead him to the launch site.
Cue the Bon Jovi song. I just needed everyone to know that you cannot see me, but I was dancing the entire time. You were like doing it up.
Hopefully, like that was bad enough that we don't get hit with like a thing or whatever.
That's really funny. I think we're safe.
Right.
No offense.
Right. No, well, of course, you call something Blaze of Glory in certain like generation. Of course, you're going to think of the theme song from Young Guns 2, which is a movie I still haven't seen. But
I have not seen any of the Young Guns, I don't think. Oh, I didn't realize this was their debut single. Did you know that?
Well, okay. Yeah, but the thing is, it's Blaze of Glory is technically John Bon Jovi as a solo artist. It's not the band.
Oh, that makes way more sense.
Yeah.
I misread that. So makes a lot more sense. So it was John Bon Jovi's debut solo single. I got you. It hit number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and Album Rock Tracks charts in 1990, becoming his only chart topper away from his band Bon Jovi. Now that I've read the Wikipedia page correctly. Star Trek.
I mean, when you enter, like, the New Jersey public school system, don't they, like, hand you a copy of Slippery When Wet?
Yes, and we literally have a John Bon Jovi rest stop on the Garden State Parkway. I pass it occasionally if I take the more expensive route to work. Like, if I'm running late, sometimes I'll, like, take the faster route.
Nice. You know who his son is married to, hey?
I do remember, and I now can't remember. Like, I knew that it was someone, and then I'm trying to remember who it is, and I can't remember.
It's, I'm pretty sure it's, like, Millie Bobby Brown.
Yes, yes, like you 11. Are correct. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But, like, he uses their, like, actual last name, like, the Italian spelling.
Yeah, Bongiliovi, or with the actual, like, long Italian one, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is Millie Bobby Brown. You are correct.
Anyways, we should talk about Star Trek now.
Yeah. Millie Bobby Brown just makes me think of Godzilla now, because I'd never watched Stranger Things.
Stranger Things? Fair. So, Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I did not remember this episode.
Nothing about it, hey?
Nope. I just didn't remember it. Nothing about it seemed familiar.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I kind of was like, wait, do I remember this one? Like, kind of.
Oh, you started, might not even
like,
remember
the premise. Yeah, and the premise of, like, the missiles and whatever. And then as we got more into it, I was like, okay, it's not actual missiles. It's okay. Yeah, no, I have seen this. But it was when I was like, it's not the top of my mind. And, like, I kind of, when I think of the kind of Eddington arc, this is obviously, like, the conclusion to it. But when I'm generally thinking about it, like, before I watched this and we were recording this episode, I always think of whatever the second word, everyone does a war crime and then it's all washed away. That episode.
Yeah.
That makes me think of it's the finale, but I guess this one is the actual.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, how, like, I didn't actually feel like I personally needed a finale on this but I'm not upset that we got it. Like, this is a good episode, I think. I do like it. One of the things about when Michael Eddington comes to town,
Eddington comes to town.
Yeah, like, you're always going to have a moral, like, an episode about, like, morality and, like, what's the right thing to do. And his presence, right, as soon as he joins the Maquis, really, it's always a good Sisko episode because Sisko loves to have lengthy conversations with his adversaries. and, like, honestly, it's because Avery Brooks is so good at monologuing that you kind of, like, are wrong not to have that in your episode. So anytime Michael Eddington is on, or even, like, Gul Dukat, for example, although I do not think that Gul Dukat and Michael Eddington are the same, it's, like, you're going to have an episode about, like, man-to-man, like, having a conversation about, like, who's smarter than the other one. Like, who's more correct, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Kenneth, what's the actor who plays it?
I always forget.
I was like, Kurtwood Smith. It's like, no.
Kurtwood Smith,
it's Ken Marshall.
Definitely not.
No, I know. Yeah. Also in Star Trek, though. In a couple times.
Yeah. He's in two Star Treks, I think.
Yeah, it's Ken Marshall. Ken Marshall, also very good at monologuing.
Yeah, that's true. So it's like a double monologue. So you mentioned this, you know, how this is the end of the Michael Eddington arc. Basically, Ira Stephen Bear has been quoted as saying, I'm going to paraphrase, that he wanted to tie up the loose ends of the Maquis prior to season 6. And so that is, this was one that he wanted to tie up loose ends in general before, like, by the end of season 5, that, like, for things that have happened prior to now. Because obviously we're getting further and further into the Dominion plots and stuff. And even though this one is related to that, it's still, like, the Maquis kind of got destroyed off to Deep Space Nine. And was it in Voyager where it was, like, Voyager's already on the air. The Maquis doesn't really... Like, this is the last of the Maquis. These people, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I needed this, like, finale, as I said earlier. But, like, I do think that it's, like, not a bad idea for an episode. It does kind of suck when, you know, your complicated characters die or have to die. I do like the trope of this episode where, like, we need to get someone in prison to help us do a thing. Like, that is a really fun trope. Like, we need to get our enemy to help us. This was a good version of that, I thought.
Yeah, it's a whole, like, you know, meta production standpoint of, like, closing the loop on the Maquis is so interesting because in the same kind of discussion, I think, again, in the Deep Space Nine Companion, where Ira talks about wanting to close that loop, they wanted to definitively say this was the end of the Maquis, these are the last of them, all wiped, the rest are wiped out by the Dominion, blah, 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 blah. And then Rick Berman and stuff, because Voyager was using the Maquis, right, in terms of, like, the blended crew and all of that, it's like, well, you can't say they're all gone because Voyager may want to use them in the future and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And they're like, because DS9 would just do something, they're like, okay, whatever, yeah, it's done in our minds, they're not going to lose them. And, like, even closing the loop with the original Maquis episodes with Casey.
Cal Hudson.
What's that? Cal Hudson, sorry. I think Casey is the actor, is the football player. Anyways, with Cal Hudson being like, oh, no, he died off screen. Like, it kind of closes that full loop or arc for Sisko, right? So
Yeah, definitely. I do want to talk about some of the set things in this episode real quick before we get into it, and also some stock footage that was reused. So the establishing shot of the starbase where Eddington is being held is reused stock footage of the Regula 1 space station from Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which is kind of funny. Did you want to say your note on that?
No, I know. It's just interesting. I'm curious to hear about, you know, your because you stream them on iTunes or whatever, right? On my D&Ds, when it cut to the Ryu shot of regular one from Star Trek 2, there was a notice drop in the visual quality when it cut to the stock footage compared to the rest of the episode.
Interesting. I didn't really notice it specifically, but I will probably go back and look at it after we are done recording to see if it looks really bad. Well, I mean, that's from 20 years prior, you know, more than 20 years, like 25 years prior.
Almost 20. Well, no, almost 20. Because 97 and, what, 82 or whatever? But yeah, a lot older. But
I forget, Wrath of Khan came out the year that I was born.
But all that being said, it is significantly lower than, like, even, like, you know, you see, like, the restock, like, Bird of Prey explosion that we see.
Yeah, oh my gosh, from, like,
Star Trek 6. They even reused it in Generations. That's newer.
I will say, I don't know if it is ad nauseum, but, like, a little bit. But I also enjoy it every time. So I'm just like, it doesn't bother me too much. Also, the Maquis base in this episode is reused the set from last episode of Children of Time. So, like, they literally reused episode from last week. Or sets from last week, which is pretty funny.
Well, okay, I'm going to skip ahead, and this is my most Star Trek thing, is caves, right?
Yeah,
like, it's they have that one soundstage that it's, like, always those, that type of, they're always in caves. Right? So.
Yeah. All right. We have a little bit of a A-plot, B-plot going on this episode, which is very exciting. We haven't had that, I feel like, in a while. But our B plot is basically Nog trying to get his confidence up and get respect from General Martok, who has been on the station recently. Nog is currently working in security on Deep Space Nine and is pretty upset that the Klingons are not respecting him or listening to his instruction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, it's kind of funny to me where it's like, I was looking at Memory Alpha, and this whole B-plot was constructed around intending to show the audience that Martok was still based on the station and not on the Rotaran full-time.
Yes.
Because I remember from a couple weeks ago, there was the Star Trek Klingon episode. Mokjaw! Another episode I sang a lot in. But anyways, so I thought that was a nice little fun tidbit.
Yes. I did think some that good.
Go ahead, sorry.
Nope, you go first.
No, I was going to say, I think it was, like, quite clever because it was, like, a fun kind of lighter B-plot towards the, like, heaviness and the speechiness of the A-plot. But also, it had some pretty good character development for Nog, too. So I just thought it was very, very clever, very well done, and very, like, economical in terms of how it was written.
Yeah, I really liked that, too. And I also felt that... excuse me, J.G. Hertzler and Aaron Eisenberg had really good chemistry in their scenes together. Like, it really...
Yeah.
I really enjoyed how at the beginning they were, like, kind of, like, at least on Nog's part, was, like, we're awkward. At the end, they're like, hi, General. Like, it's like they're, like, buddies now. At the end, they have mutual respect, and I just enjoy the, like, change over the episode. I do think that Jake is being a little bit ridiculous, because the scene is set where Nog, like, loves human food, so he is, like, really happy to be over having squid, and Jake's loving it until he learns that he put, like, tube grub sauce on it, and so he's, like, grossed out, and it's, like, very much the thing where you, like, when you're, at least when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I love this until I find out what it is. Like, my parents...
Yeah.
They didn't, like, lie to me about food, but, like, they definitely, if it was something I was, like, would not eat unless I, like, didn't know about it, like, there were things that were not told to me. Specifically my mom's stuffing. She makes chicken liver mushroom stuffing, and I, as a child, did not like mushrooms and assumed I didn't like chicken liver. But, like, her stuffing fucking rules, and it's my favorite stuffing in the entire world. Now I very much love both of those things. But, like, as a kid, I just was not told about the chicken liver in it. And, like, you know what? I wasn't allergic to it. It didn't harm me. It's fine. But, Cisco's asking at the dinner, Cisco's asking Nog like how his job's going, and Jake is like being very like, you're leaving things out of your story, and like you need to tell my dad if things are wrong. And I just think that that is very pushy, and Jake needs to mind his own business.
Yeah, it's very much like your friend tells you something in confidence and then you find it amusing, so you like blow it up and kind of coerce them into like sharing something that they're not comfortable sharing and they told you in confidence. But
yeah, like I do think that Cisco has good advice for Nog and is the right person to talk to about this, but like Nog needed to probably come to him on his own.
Yeah,
I don't think that there is a huge plot here besides the Klingons are being loud and disregarding of what Nog is saying. Ferengi are pretty sensitive to loud noises, but it did amuse me that Nog could literally like clock when it was like above appropriate levels. Like there's like a sound or like a noise ordinance or something.
That's such a, like, it was funny, but also such a cop move, where it's like,
yeah, you
know, the minute they cross one decimal over the line, they're officially disturbing the peace, and I'm going to catch them.
Yeah, that part was a bit cringy, but in general, it was really amusing. There was also one scene where Jake is, like, getting mad that Nog, like, walked into their apartment because he had, like, a girl over, and, I just, like, was laughing because my friend AJ was talking about how the Federation rooms don't have, like, doorknobs, so you can't really, like, put a sock on the door, like, when you have, like, a sex partner over. But I do love that Nog's like, I know you, Jake. You're just talking with the girl. Nothing was happening. Like, okay, in your dreams, buddy.
So, the Maquis, after the, you know, the initial dinner, or during the initial dinner at the start of the episode where Jake blows up Nog's spot and Ben gives Nog some advice on how to deal with the Klingons, a Klingon comes in and is General Martok in a rush to give some serious information to Captain Sisko, and Nog's ready to stand up to him, and it's like, not now, Nog, which was a good meeting, but as a good, a good bit. But as we were talking about, the Klingons gave the Maquis some cloaking devices and have intercepted this message to A. Michael saying that the missiles have been launched, and this could ignite the powder keg that is the Alpha Quadrant since the Dominion came as sort of first strike, and then it would be held against the Federation and the Klingons, even though it was the Maquis.
Yes. Because they are mostly human, and they would just assume that they were, like, related. I did really find it funny that after they get this message, they're like, who do we know named Michael? Sisko, like, goes into... That's why where we see the space station from The Wrath of Khan. You know, Sisko shows up to, like, talk to Michael Eddington. Basically, he's like, I'm going to offer you your freedom if you come help us, like, find and destroy these missiles. But I really laughed when he plays the message for Eddington. The message that clearly starts with Michael, as you said earlier. And Eddington's just like, that has nothing to do with me. Michael's a very common name. And then, like, a minute later
so good.
I know. I was just like, but then knows the missiles are, like, undetectable. I'm like, buddy, you just said 2 seconds ago that you had nothing to do with this. And you're like, now you know everything about it. It was very funny.
It was such a unty read. It's just so
good. Yes. I loved also the way that Eddington's describing these, like, undetectable missiles. It reminds me of that scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when they realized that Marcus Brody had, like, the map to the Holy Grail, and Indiana's like, and Indiana's like, you'll never find him. He blends in. He knows a million languages, and then they cut to Marcus Brody, and he's like, hello, does anyone speak English here?
Yeah,
it's so funny.
By any luck, but yeah, he has the Grail already.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit where Eddington's like describing what it's like to be in prison, and it doesn't sound great, I'll admit. Like, it sounds pretty boring. But he's like, yeah, you're just waiting around between counseling sessions or a rehabilitation seminar. And I'm like, that sounds awfully boring, but also way less bad than like real life prison that we have in our world. But there should also be no prisons in Utopia like that. Or a perceived utopia. So, like, this prison's still bad. It's just...
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And even, like, in contrast to, like, what we've seen... And there's a whole other... It'd be interesting to do a kind of, like, essay or, like, analysis on incarceration within Star Trek. Because it's, like, again, to reference Voyager, where when Janeway goes to New Zealand... to the penal colony to, like, pick up Tom Paris to basically do the Michael Eddington thing in this and help find the Maquis.
Yes.
It's much different than Eddington sitting on a, you know, a starbase just in a redress of the Voyager brig set by himself, right? Like,
yeah, part of me is, like, are they not allowing Eddington to have, like, a book to read? Like, what is happening here? He's just sitting there doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And as you know, prisons here are very different. Like, we have some... there were some prisoners fighting the LA fires. As their job. As their prison job. Yeah. On the way to the Badlands, because basically they're like, we're going to hit up the Badlands, because Dax and Worf had already searched and found nothing with the Defiant. It's basically, a lot of this episode is Sisko and Eddington on a runabout talking to each other. Eddington is eating his food or whatever, and it's obviously a replicator food. And he turns into one of those, like, annoying privileged hippie types that's just like, all processed food should be banned because the replicated food isn't, you know, as good. It isn't as nutritious or wholesome or whatever as making food yourself, growing food yourself. Like, he sounds like one of those, like, RFK Jr. types. And, like, not everyone can afford to just, like, grow their own food. Like, where are you going to grow your own food on a space station? Like, I guess you could have, like, a place
for it. Well, Sisko does. Yeah.
That's true. I forgot. But, like, you can't feed the entire station that way, though. Like, that's not practical.
No, fair. Couple things, though. I'm just so impressed, Elise, about your dedication to your professionalism in podcasting, because I was waiting for a break-in to, what did you say, Badlands? And then that's when I was playing Badlands on my phone. And you obviously heard that. And
no,
just
I didn't.
Kept going with your...
I didn't, you didn't hear it.
It didn't
no.
pick it up. Oh, maybe it wasn't, like, quite loud enough. Okay, but maybe Melissa can do some magic in editing. But it's like, what is it, Badlands? So I held my phone up, and it was, like... played 17 seconds of the intro to Bruce.
Oh my god.
Again, New Jersey music. That's the theme of this episode.
I just needed you to know that I was talking and, like, only paying attention to myself in that moment, so I definitely did not hear any music. But also, of course I didn't, because I'm self-involved.
But yeah, no, that idea, like, I did find that conversation interesting, where it's like, there is a discernible difference between replicated food and, like, grown food.
Of course.
And it's like, but it's never, I don't know if it's ever quite been referenced so specifically like that, and I found it interesting. But, like, your point too about, like, you know, how do you feed, like, the whole station, and, like, you know, you'd have to have a
obviously
totally different sort of, you know, bigger arboretum, and it'd be
obviously
less hobbyist.
Yeah, the replicators are the most efficient way to feed everyone. Like,
yeah,
I think that sometimes when I pick apart stuff like this, I do forget that it is supposed to be a post-scarcity society. So, like, they could figure out a way probably to feed everyone with, like, a garden and, like...
Yeah.
But, like, where are you going to put, like, cattle for, like, a hamburger? You know, like, there's like, a finite amount of space on a space station is basically what I was trying to get at.
Well, and even, like, on a planet and stuff, too, right? Because, like, if you want to think about how much land is, like, required to,
grow
food and, like, raise cattle and, like, the environmental impacts of you know, what I want to say, like, industrial farming and things like that versus, like, sustainable farming practices. Yeah, no, I totally hear you. Totally picking up what you're laying
down. Yeah. You mentioned this earlier, but, you know, we do get a little bit of a finale on Sisko's buddy Cal Hudson, who had popped up in the Maquis episodes one and two from season two. It was his friend that was, like, turned on him, basically. And I kind of forgot about that character. But it sparks an interesting conversation between Eddington and Sisko, where they're talking about how Sisko reacts to the Maquis. And I think Eddington has a really interesting point that because of Cal and because of Michael, like, and because of his job on Deep Space Nine, which is closest to the Dominion, Sisko acts as if all of this is happening to him personally in a way that I don't think someone back at, like, Starfleet headquarters would think. You know what I mean? And it makes sense because he is at the closest base to where the Maquis operates and where the Dominion operates, or operated, because the Maquis may be done. So I do think it makes sense to me that Sisko acts like this is personally happening to him. But I also strongly am like, Sisko, this is not personally happening to you. There are circumstances which have caused this to happen. People aren't just, like, betraying Sisko for the fun of it.
The interesting thing, I should stop using the word interesting.
It's a crutch. I know, I have a few words that I feel like I say too often. Can't think of any of them right now, but I'm sure I've said them all. Since we started recording
on this
today.
Podcast.
Yes. Right?
excuse me. I wonder if Sisko takes these betrayals, whether it's Hudson or Eddington or whomever, so personally, because it's more about him than it is about them, right? Like, for me, generally, what annoys me the most about other people are when I see the things I don't like in myself reflected back to me.
Yeah. I think that's a really human experience that a lot of us have, but maybe don't think about quite so often.
And, like, Sisko is a very self-righteous dude.
Yes.
And, like, these people have, like, Eddington has that same vein, but makes a different choice. And, like, is there part of Sisko that, like, respects that or wishes he could have made that choice, but then that makes him feel uncomfortable, so then he doubles down? Like,
I completely see what you're saying, and I think that's a really interesting point that I hadn't considered. I also want to mention that I completely forget always how bananas the Badlands look, like how they physically look on screen. It looks like Mustafar from Star Wars, but, like, with fire tornadoes.
wait, sorry. You're really fascinated by what looks like? What's the region called?
You may know it as the Badlands. There's a point where Sisko takes Eddington's handcuffs off on the runabout because he needs him to, like, pilot the ship when they come across some Jem'Hadar fighters. And we get more back and forth fighting between Sisko and Eddington, like a chat argument, like chat fighting. I don't mean physical fighting. And they're arguing about how to fight the Jem'Hadar. So it's just a lot of arguing in this episode. But I do think when it comes down to it, Sisko and Eddington actually work quite well together. And I think that they worked together for a long time prior to the betrayal, even though we didn't always see Michael Eddington on Deep Space Nine. But like, I always assumed he was in the background somewhere. And you just see that they, like, because they probably had similar training in Starfleet, I don't mean it in a boring, like, everyone thinks the same way, but, like, they probably there's probably shorthand between them that they could use that, like, if me and Sisko were in a fight, like, we wouldn't have the same schooling to, like, know certain ways to handle it. So I'm saying, like, because they had similar backgrounds of just being in Starfleet, I think that they understand a lot of the same things. Like, technically, I don't mean, like, how they feel about the Dominion, or I think I got lost in my own thought there a little bit. Eventually they land and they look in a foggy cave. Caves. They fight a couple of Jem'Hadar folks. Eddington kills one that's about to kill Sisko, and there's like a bit where, because obviously, like, they're not really trusting each other. And Eddington kind of jokes, not jokes. He's like, oh, I just was going to kill whichever one of you was, like, standing at the end of it. I think this is where they get a little of their respect back for each other. Like, Eddington definitely saves Sisko's life in this moment. And then a few minutes later, they're like, Sisko remembers that the Jem'Hadar can be invisible sometimes, and he just shoots blindly and kills a couple, too. So, like, they're protecting each other.
Yeah, it's, and I guess to your point about, like, not that, like, it's like, you know, groupthink and we only, like, can ally with those that, like, think the same, but, like, they're just so similar, and it, like,
yeah,
it was giving me a little bit, like, I know this is a little, I mean, the novel had come out already, and, like, you know, the first adaptation of the movie, but, like, it's giving me a little bit like Hannibal and Will Graham vibes, like, from Red Dragon or Manhunter or, like, whatever.
I haven't seen that since the theater, actually.
But...
I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, and just, like, the way Marshall plays it is just so good, and, like, I don't know, the way they have him costumed, like, in his, like, Maquis outfit, and it's, like, the way, like, it has to have these big shoulder pads in it, because, like, his shoulders look so broad, but, like, it kind of accentuates how long his neck is, and there's something, like, kind of serpentine in how he's reading.
Oh, interesting.
Like, and how he's, like, toying with, like, Sisko a little bit, and just, it's so...
I think that's why it reminds
me... It's just
so
good.
I think that's why I also thought of Gul Dukat a little bit. In, not...
The neck, yeah.
The neck, but also the loving to kind of taunt Sisko. Like, they've... Obviously, yeah. Gul Dukat and Michael Eddington have extremely different morality feelings and, like, what they're willing to do and what they think is right. They're very different people. But I do think the way that they interact with Sisko is very similar. And also, they both have, like, sneaky necks. There is a scene where Michael Eddington basically, like, breaks down because they come across about 20 Maquis members that are dead, and he's just devastated because he felt like they were winning. He explains that they were actually going to declare themselves an independent nation, like the Maquis colonies that were still, like, around. So just to come here and find, like, all these dead people who were your friends and who you felt, like, he's like, I was their leader, like, I'm responsible for them. He must feel terrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's made worse by Sisko kind of realizing that the Federation could have probably helped them. Because not helping and realizing you should have, like, that's just, what does that help Michael Eddington to know, you know? Sorry, I just dropped something.
No worries. It's having values and stating your values is important. following through and living those values is where it gets difficult.
Yeah.
Right? And I think mm-hmm. Sisko is having this realization that for all the moral high ground he claims to stake a lot of it, believing in the Federation and Starfleet and everything else, that they don't always live what practice what they yeah. preach, I guess, ultimately.
Honestly, I'm gonna just say this. It makes me think of the Democrats and the Republicans in the United States a lot, because you will have people, like a lot of liberals that vote for Democrats, getting mad at you if you criticize the way they handle things or if you don't align with them, because they have a tendency to say, oh yeah, we're for all of these great things, but they do nothing about it. And then we get more mad at the Democrats than we do the Republicans, because the Republicans, like, that's what we expect them to be shitty. Like, the Democrats claim to want better for everyone and they don't do anything about it. So it just feels like, it feels really similar to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you expect the right to, like, speed run the fascist outbreak.
Exactly.
Whereas a lot of, like, the liberals, like liberal Democrats or, like, you know, centrists in, like, Canada or, like, whatever, it's like, no, we just want to feel good about ourselves as we titrate out the fascism drop by drop, right? Yeah. And the austerity and everything else, instead of just, like, being at the fire hose.
Or they'll say, yeah, we're against the fascism, but we are letting, we're not, like, putting our lives on the line to stop it. We're just letting it happen. Because the way that you need to stop these things, it doesn't look palatable to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense that in that moment in the episode, Eddington is furious. And is like, he says, I wish I knew killing you right now would make me feel better. It's really dark. But I feel, obviously he means literally, but like, it's sometimes I feel like the Democrats are like, I'm sorry to get so political. It's just, that's how I feel right now. Yeah, like, go away, because you're doing nothing. Like, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the weird, like, liberal fantasy of, like, someone criticizing them from the left in from a minority group, whether they're a queer person mm-hmm. or a racialized person or whatever. And it's like, well, if the Republicans are in power, I can't wait to see you get curb stomped. And it's like, oh, cool, you're fantasizing about me dying because I'm saying you should do more?
Yeah, it's really just up. Like, do you hear what you're suggesting? Like, in, you know, it's, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's really bad. I did find that this episode was physically dark. It was a little hard to, like, see what was going on in the cave. I mean, I know that was intention, but it felt very like more modern television at that point, because, and I mean, the last like few years, everything, movies and a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows are just like not well lit. But they do find some Maquis members that are hiding, and we actually meet Rebecca Sullivan, who was the person presenting the recorded message at the beginning of the episode. And we learn that that's Eddington's wife, and like he doesn't even like hug her. He doesn't even like hug her, but I'm like, well, kiss and hug her, damn it. Like, if you just saw 20 people dead outside and then found your wife, wouldn't you just, like, go make out with her? Like, what are you doing here? Anyway, I would at least embrace more than they did. Because I'd be so happy she was still alive. As soon as they find Rebecca and company, Eddington is like, this is my wife. And I think Sisko...
My wife!
Yeah. You're fine. he has iPod mini, everyone know it, for girls. And Sisko is like, oh, there's more to this than I realized. But at the same time, Eddington and Rebecca are like, let's get the fuck out of here. And Sisko is very confused, because he's like, wait, what about the missiles that we came here to stop? And And Eddington's just like, does this look like a launch site to you? And then Rebecca finally is like, no, there are no missiles. The message to Michael was just so he knew we got here okay. So basically, the entire thing was a ploy from the Maquis to, like, get Sisko to ask him to come with him on this mission so that he could be reunited with his friends and family. And he admits that if he was not invited to or forced to go on this mission, he would have volunteered. And now Sisko is pissed because he was lied to. And I'm like, you know what? Sisko, like, I get being angry because the Jem'Hadar were there. And he was like, I would have brought more men. But, like, Eddington's like, yeah, we didn't know. I didn't know they were there either. So, like, that wouldn't have happened. But I kind of feel, like, amused that Eddington, like, got one over on him a little bit in that moment.
Yeah.
That amusement ends pretty quickly because Eddington ends up having to sacrifice himself, going out in a blaze of glory, if you might call it, so that his wife and friends and Sisko can all escape this planet without getting harmed by more Jem'Hadar. Sisko has a lot to think about with how Michael Eddington behaved, and I think he gains a lot more respect for him in the end. And he says in a conversation he's having with Dax, I called him a traitor once, but in a way, he was the most loyal man I ever met. And I think that's probably true. He was really dedicated to his cause, and he really never wavered from that.
Having values is easy, living them is hard.
Yes.
Now it's time for the Altair Water first pointer. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek and Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair IV in The Forbidden Planet, a.k.a. The Tempest in Space. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I did not think this was that thirsty of an episode. Maybe if Nog actually did walk in on Jake and a girl, that would have been kind of hot. But I did appreciate that Eddington's last word, even though he didn't kiss her in that moment when he saw her again, was his wife's name, Rebecca. Like, that felt sad and also just loving. I also watched Avengers Endgame last night, so, like, Tony Stark just died. So, like, it's just my emotions everywhere.
I am Iron Man.
Yes, exactly. Oh, apparently, I learned yesterday that when Tony puts the Infinity Stones on his suit at the end and he says, I am Iron Man, apparently all the writers and the Russo brothers were, like, trying to figure out what he should say in that moment and couldn't think of anything, and a crew member was like, obviously he should just say, I am Iron Man, and then they shot it that way, and that's what got in the movie.
Hope they gave that crew member a bonus.
I hope so too. I didn't read up on that for this podcast episode. Did you have any thirst crunchers?
Sometimes the simplest.
Yes.
I was gonna say, sometimes the simplest answers are the best answers.
Exactly.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly.
Rebecca's thirsty. Hot, but
yeah,
like,
that's true.
Yeah,
she is hot.
I already gave my candidate for the most Star Trek things earlier in the episode, caves. what's your nominee for most Star Trek thing, Elise?
I kind of cheated on this one, and this is not like a Star Trek thing, but just the idea that a character that doesn't speak went berserk and started screaming, we're all doomed, regarding Morn is very funny to me, and I just thought should get honorable mention.
There you go. All right. Until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z.
Yeah, you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodWraiths, and you can also email us at podwraiths@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.